Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, we'll still send a code 3.
Did you just touch my drum set?
Hey, knock it off!
Derek Kramer.
You sound insane. Do you realize that? You should be medicated.
Zach Jones.
F*** you, Brennan. I know you touched my drum set, and I want to hear that dirty little mouth admit it.
Kramer.
Out of my face.
Jones.
That's because you touched my drum set, because I know cops doesn't start till 4.
Kramer and Jones. On WGR Sports Radio 550.
Cops doesn't start till 4, but Zach Jones, Derek Kramer, we're here with you from 1 to 3, filling in for One Bills Live as the Bills are on the bye week. We're almost through it. We are almost through the bye week. Made it to Friday. Congratulations, everyone.
We made it to Friday, and also, yesterday, I need to know, because I'm not it. I'm definitely closer to this than you are.
Mm-hmm.
But who else was 41 years old yesterday that had a great day?
I don't know. It was.
And I mean a great day.
That was fun to just see a lot of the older guys in sports. It's the two quarterbacks playing last night for Thursday Night Football with Rodgers and Flacco. But then you also have Max Scherzer going out on the mound and performing well. I don't want to say, you know, elite and exceptional and, oh my gosh, he's been well. And it was kind of fun to see. It was a lot of fun to watch, like, it not be a tire fire. I was fully expecting Thursday Night Football to be a disaster, and instead, it's Flacco and Rodgers in an offensive show.
Right.
It's a blast.
You and I talked about it, and I dismissed it outright. I'm like, I'm not even close to watching this game. I'm watching Toronto and Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
And turns out I missed probably the best Thursday night game of the slate this season.
So far, yeah.
Shame on me, I guess. But also, I watched a different 41-year-old dealing. You know, at the very least, playing well enough to shut it down. Hey, I need to know now, like, if anyone is 41 years old that's listening, did you have a great day yesterday?
Get yourself to Vegas now.
For science.
You get yourself to Vegas now.
Nope, you had to do it. You had to do it yesterday.
You had to do it yesterday. That's right.
You had to do it yesterday. It's too late now. It's too late now.
So hopefully, you took advantage of what is being affectionately known as the Icy Hot Bowl, Unk Day. Very good.
It was probably Unk Day. And anyone else that's 41 years old, I'm having doubts that you had a bad day yesterday. As a matter of fact, I'm kind of jealous. My lower back would seem to disagree, but I am jealous.
That's why it's the Icy Hot Bowl yesterday in Thursday Night Football. I liked watching that those two guys were able to go after it. I also kind of liked that in some ways Mike Tomlin was proven correct. Like, why would you trade this guy in the division? Like, his fears were true.
Now, you want to talk about a coach that lives in fears all the time?
I know.
Despite having a quote that says we can't live in our own fears. Like,
but man, Flacco was dealing. He was dealing. 31 for 47, 342, 3 touchdowns. With this being said, he made sure to target the good players. 23 targets to Ja'Marr Chase, 10 to T. Higgins.
23?
He made sure that the good guys got the passes. But it was still, look, he came in. It's, what, his second week with the team? Yeah, I'm going to throw it to the really talented wide receivers I have. And to be fair, Rodgers has been doing the same thing for Pittsburgh. They don't have those guys, but DK Metcalf is good. Pat Freiermuth is good. Cool. I'm going to go to those two, and I'm going to do it often. Do you see Broderick Jones, though, tackle him after celebrating a touchdown? And Rodgers lost his mind. Hysterical. I, for the first time in years, very much sympathize with Aaron Rodgers.
Nope.
I would have lost my mind. You're tackling me to the ground? I'm 41.
My guess,
I am frail.
My guess is he didn't mean to tackle him.
Maybe not, but don't run at me at full speed and then fall over. You got to understand your body, brother. You got to understand your body.
He's excited and happy.
I totally sympathize with Rodgers.
I am going to quote Matt Bove on this one and say, oh, Aaron Rodgers doesn't like being shoved?
Well, look, I sympathize with Rodgers.
Nope.
The last thing but I also can't stand when like I see football players like smacking the helmets of their teammates. Like, dude, enough. Like, get out of my face for a minute.
I'm sorry. If I do something cool.
And don't even get me started on soccer. Don't even get me started on soccer.
If I do something cool at 41 years old in the 11-day power play, dogpile me.
See, I think they're celebrating, and then there's whatever some of this is. Like, again, Broderick Jones tackling Aaron Rodgers accidentally or on purpose. It doesn't really matter. It ends up happening.
I'm inviting it.
Or in soccer, a guy scores a goal, clearly has a celebration he wants to do and has been planning, what have you. But God forbid the defender that ran 500 yards doesn't immediately tackle him because he's so excited. Like, man, I'm trying to do my slide thing. I have, like, something under my shirt I want to pull up, and you just bull rushed me. Just give me 5 minutes.
No, that's what stoppage time is for. Do that after.
That's what I'm saying. Do it after. I'm going to do my celebration now, then you can get excited.
He can do it after.
But then the moment's gone. The moment's gone.
Nope, moment's not gone. Crest first.
No, man. I fell for Rodgers there because, again, he's 41 years old.
I don't feel bad for him at all.
And then it doesn't help. Broderick Jones is not very good. So there's probably also that added weight if he sees the guy doing it. He's like, you? Really? Of all people? Defend me first.
The personality that Aaron Rodgers has become, I don't feel bad in the slightest.
Oh, that doesn't help. But I don't really want to be body slammed by people because I threw a touchdown pass. Like, just slap me up.
You know who probably would accept being tackled, throwing a touchdown pass to take a late lead? Joe Flacco.
I don't think so at all. I think a lot of these guys are like, dude, just get away from me. I'm already going to be sore tomorrow.
At the very least, he won't be as publicly heated.
He won't be as
Joe Flacco
heated.
Pull
That's
him,
probably fair.
Joe Flacco probably knows to pull him aside in the locker room and go, bro, what are you doing? Can you not do that ever again, please?
I don't know. For me, again, bringing up their age, but tackle him, it's all fun and games until he hurts his hip or he busts up his shoulder.
But
then
that's
it's
not
like,
an
great.
Age requirement to tell someone not to do that.
No, but age plays a factor in that of like, I'm not the same young guy I was, you know, where I'd be okay after this. Now it's not, all because you're a little excited.
Again,
a little much.
There's a place to do that, and it's pull away into the locker room and go, buddy, no.
My guy.
Just straight up, no. Don't ever do that again. Not in public where all the cameras are on you because you just threw the touchdown pass. Yeah, no. I don't feel bad in the slightest there at all about Aaron Rodgers because, again, it just – it's the abrasive personality at this
right.
point.
Right, his personality over the last few years has not helped his case in any means.
But much like how Max Scherzer's screaming at his manager mm-hmm. not to pull him out of the game, and if he gets rung up after that, like, you don't feel bad for that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you are in front of everybody. It's very much going to be, all eyes are on you. All eyes are on you, Aaron Rodgers. Don't freak out like that. Because the first thing people are going to go with is, you are sensitive.
No, and that's fine, but I'm kind of okay with it. I think there's also a time and a place of certain celebrations. I don't think I have to be, I hate saying it like this, but like, you know, correct because of where I'm at. Where it's like, dude, you tackled me. Seriously? You're 350 pounds and you're landing on top of me. I'd rather not deal with that after scoring a touchdown. But overall, very good game yesterday. The Jays won last night as well to keep the ALCS interesting because, God forbid, we got an interesting NLCS against the Dodgers.
Yeah, interesting.
That would be a crime against baseball.
Interesting is not the word I'd use anymore. You have a series.
You have just a flat-out series. A home team has yet to win a game. It has been all road teams. Seattle's playing host again tonight. We'll see how that goes.
If the Jays can sweep in Seattle and then you have to win one of two games at home, I like your chances, even though the trend would remain home teams are 0-5 now in this series. What gives?
Yeah.
In a sport where typically your home records are far and away better than your road records,
mm-hmm.
because of how baseball is formulated.
Right.
Home team gets last chance to score the runs. It is interesting to me that it's been like that so far in the ALCS. Right now, they're all in Seattle. I'm okay with it for one more game. Let it keep going for one more game.
Yep. First pitch tonight, 6:08 over on FS1, and then Dodgers-Brewers, 8:30 first pitch for them. Dodgers, of course, you could probably get through the context clues there, up 3-0 in that series. They are a very good team. We'll talk a little bit of Jays and baseball coming up.
They are so annoying.
They are. But we had a fun conversation yesterday with the Bills and kind of everything that's been going on with them and where we're at now. We're in the bye week. As we mentioned, we're almost through it. They're still sitting at 4-2. But where do they necessarily need to get better? What can they hide? What do they have to live with? Last 2 years, the Bills have made pretty sound trades to really unlock parts of their game. Rasul Douglas comes in 2 years ago, a corner. He all of a sudden becomes a interception machine, and he's really able to hold it down for them at that spot. Last year, it's Amari Cooper. While he doesn't flash in terms of constantly getting targets and being a wide receiver one that maybe we all wanted, he had moments of brilliance and also really just, I think, allowed the offense to open itself up and to be more free-flowing, where maybe before that they were so, you know, narrow-minded, narrow-visioned of, it's got to be Khalil Shakir, it's got to be through the run game. If we don't have that, we have nothing. Cooper kind of opened that up. And now we kind of sit at a very similar spot. I think this week, last year, they made the Cooper trade, and the Bills still have some pretty clear issues. Funny enough, some of their issues are actually the same positions they've traded for already, cornerback and wide receiver. Safety may also be a massive need for this team. They do have guys coming back on defense in Hoyt and Ogunjobi. We'll see about next week if Max Harrison's 21-day practice window opens up. That could be a long-term solution at corner, maybe not necessarily the short-term, but thinking more long-term for that into January and such. Harrison could play a role there. Same with Dorian Strong. We don't actually know what his neck injury is going to be. He was put on IR, but he still may be able to come back. And he was starting to, I think, really start to supplant Trey White as cornerback number two. On offense, though, outside of Josh Palmer and Dalton Kincaid, they have the full complement of guys that they're going to have. They're not really adding anybody through injuries or through suspensions. And so where we kind of got yesterday, or at least I did, was maybe adding to the offense is the way to go. Maybe you can live with this defense of, well, you're going to get a few guys back. It's not going to be the same team. They're probably not going to be one of the worst run defenses we've ever seen, definitely the worst this year. Pass defense maybe should get better. Maybe adding a guy like a Rashid Shaheed. And I don't think Chris Olave. Mike Shope and Chris and Bulldog talked about this yesterday, kind of mentioning that if they really did go for someone like Olave, they're changing their identity. They're changing their philosophy. They're all of a sudden going to, yeah, you know what, that everyone eats thing didn't really work. This is our wide receiver one. We're going to pay him as such because they picked up the fifth year. New Orleans picked up the fifth year option, so you're going to have to. And we're going to go back to what we were doing before. I don't see that being a likelihood middle of October.
And I think that that's the part where it's you might need to give up on the idea. Mm-hmm. And this is something you and I talked about yesterday, too, of I'm starting to wonder if the scheme really does hold back the wide receivers on the boundary here on this team. I do wonder if Keon Coleman is unlocked in a different sense with a different offensive coordinator. I wonder if Josh Palmer is able to do more on a per-game basis, if he's able to be on an offense that allows the outside receivers to thrive a little more. I watch how other teams are utilizing mm-hmm. their players. George Pickens is running free and wild, and he was brought in originally as the number two wide receiver on that team. They get CeeDee Lamb back, and they've got a bevy of options in Dallas. I watch the Saints with Chris Olave. I watch what Atlanta has done with Drake London, basically saying, you're our passing game. Mm-hmm. And it is hilarious, but like
Yeah, they're down Darnell Mooney, and they're like, that's fine. You're just going to get a lot of targets.
But
now,
also, good Lord, I watch that game between Tampa and Seattle. Egbuka and Smith and Jigba both thriving for their respective teams. And it's not like any of these offenses are, well, I mean, outside of New Orleans, slacking in any means, in the slightest.
Mm-hmm.
And I do wonder if it is that predicated want and desire for balance that is holding the Bills back in a sense. At least offensively. To a point where it is just legitimately detrimental for the outside receivers on the Buffalo Bills. The leading receiver on the Bills did not play on Monday night and is a tight end. That's 46th in the league. Shakir's basically right behind him.
Mm-hmm.
But Shakir is yet to surpass Malik Nabers, who's missed two games already and will for the rest of the season, with a knee injury. A.J. Brown, who has been in tumultuous waters about his usage and involvement in that offense, is 13 yards behind Kincaid. I really do wonder what the outside receivers are going to look like when Joe Brady is inevitably hired by another team. He's not going to go the Bobby Slowick route. He's not going to go the Ken Dorsey route of getting fired after being considered for coaching positions. He's going to make it through this season, and it's going to be just fine. But I do think I'm at least curious now that scheme has more to do with this than we all originally thought.
Well, that was always the conversation, too, with Diggs. Once, you know, you'd gotten over, all right, he's gone. Now let's look at the big picture. You saw he became less effective once Brady took over. Him and Gabe Davis both became far less
effective. His numbers tanked.
Yep. And so I think there is credibility to it's the scheme. Now, the scheme can work. That's the thing. It has worked. They're still, I think, fourth in terms of total points per game. I think they're at now 27 or 28. But they're still fourth or fifth in points per game. They are still scoring very well. But they get into these ruts when one piece is removed. And you're looking at teams like San Francisco, who is down to Mac Jones. Brandon Ayuk hasn't played this year. You know, Juwan Jennings is not playing. And they're getting Kendrick Bourne going. They're getting Ricky Pearsall going. They don't even have George Kittle out there. And they're able to make that work. Where the Bills, you know, Brandon Bean really built up Josh Palmer being the new addition for the Bills, hasn't really done much this year. Loved the big play that he had against Atlanta, but before that, hadn't really done much. Keon Coleman this year is averaging under 10 yards per reception. So he's not even really getting the yak going or anything like that. And that's where I think many fans sit with the wide receiver position is, why am I actually looking around the rest of the league and seeing backup quarterbacks being able to just get it to these receivers running wide open? I fought a little bit against it because I'm like, well, you know, it's September. I don't necessarily want to see everything in the cookie jar. I don't want them to show everything against the New Orleans Saints, right? Or whoever in the first week of the season, the first month of the season. Now, though, you've lost two in a row. And you don't look like a team that is very creative. You look very stuck in the mud and don't really know where to go on offense. And it really does, again, look like Allen has to perform magic to get them going again. And when he can't, they're not going anywhere. The second half of that Atlanta game, they had ample opportunities to come back. Against New England, it's the turnovers that just keep them out of the game. They can't get going. And even in Atlanta, Allen has two picks. It's just they look so frustrated, I think is maybe the best way to put it. The offense looks so stagnant and frustrating because I think it is. That they have not found that second outlet. And I think that's maybe where you wonder too. I agree. I don't think Brady's going to be the OC next year. But I do wonder, if teams are going to start looking at him and going, got a little weird there in that second year, didn't it? Why?
Why? And there's a lot of ways to look at it. And I do think that the biggest point for me is how rough the offense looked without Dalton Kincaid in there on Monday night. And then I saw something. This is cherry picking a stat, I guess, to help a narrative, but I do want to make that clear before I mention it. Tight end receiving efficiency versus on-field snap, like the snap share. And this graph, Dalton Kincaid, in terms of yards per route run, is easily the best tight end in the league. He's on the field maybe 50% on the snap share on this graph. He becomes this very lone target where he's producing great, and it should be in like that top corner. But he's used half the time, and he's now sticking out like a sore thumb of, oh, he's underused.
Yeah.
And while I do agree that Sal mentions like maybe his efficiency has to do with the fact that he's fresh.
It's the CJ Spiller effect of like, ooh, do you actually want to use him more?
But the thing is I want to be curious enough to try.
Especially when I don't have anyone else telling me not to.
Especially
it's not like Shakir. It's like, yeah, but you got to get Shakir 8 targets a game. Coleman. Keon Coleman is who you wanted to. It's not like he's getting 6, 7, 8 targets a game.
Right. This is where everybody eats turns into a little bit of a detriment. And for the second year in a row, the best receiving option of the season misses a football game. And everything crashes to a halt. That is no longer an accident. That's what we call a trend.
And it's frustrating, especially with Kincaid. He misses the Atlanta game coming off of, I would argue, his best game as a Bill.
It was his best game.
6 targets, 6 catches, first time over 100 yards, didn't get in the end zone, but he was great. But to that point, even as the game was going on, I was wondering, why is he not being targeted more? He's clearly beating up a very good New England secondary. He's the problem child. He's the one New England can't.
He is their problem. Why is he not on the field more?
And why are you not just like, hey, he's eating. Let's keep going.
The injury makes it make more sense.
Right. You wonder. I mean, I know there was feelings too. Maybe he'd broken a finger on his hand. I mean, we eventually learned it's something entirely different. But even at the time, it felt like that. And I've heard people call Joe Brady stubborn. I think maybe there's something to that of wanting it to work. We've already had to have McDermott 2 weeks in a row discuss the getting too cute stuff.
Especially because of the fact that you try another one of those end arounds 1 week after being told, not being told, but maybe being told. I don't know.
Maybe.
We're not in those rooms, but it's publicly said that it was too cute by the head coach. And you go ahead and you try it again, and it's snuffed out again. I've also really seemed to notice that Brady and trick plays don't really work, do they?
No, and it usually it also signifies kind of the end of a game where it's like, they're not going to win this. They're not going to win this. Like it goes
right.
It goes to hell fast, and you're like, yep, that's the sign from the football gods. This is over. Like just cut it out. We're done. It has that feel. Now, that's true of a lot of trick plays. I think for many people, they're exciting and they're fun, and that's absolutely true. I look at them a little bit differently of you need to run them to catch a better team off guard. There's a time and a place good teams run them. I'm not disagreeing with that. Kansas City made a living off of that in their peak years, in the red zone especially. But I think when, you know, Chicago pulls off a flea flicker, and I have people tweeting at me like, I wish Buffalo did this. I don't.
Ready?
Chicago's trying to build excitement. They're trying to be flashy. The Bills have moved on from their flashiness era. I think the problem is, though, they might have to marry flashiness with efficiency. And they have the quarterback to do that.
I think it's the opposite. They are so disciplined on efficiency that you no longer see flashy. So when they try flashy, it doesn't work.
It's good because
I've seen the Bills do a flea flicker.
Yeah.
It went for like maybe about 15 yards.
Well, yeah.
Which is the opposite of the intention of a flea flicker.
Because, yeah, like, I think you're right, though. Like they've gotten so stuck in their way. Sal brought this up with Mike and Chris as well on the defensive side of things. They beat it.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah, you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. That seemed, I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Into the guy's head so much of don't let the big play happen, don't let the big play happen, don't get beat over the top, that now all of a sudden making a play in front of them is becoming a problem.
The big plays are happening underneath them, and then they hit the second or third level, and it's over.
And so, you know, maybe that is something to think about with the Bills going forward is are they too rigid, are they too stiff in their philosophies and how they want to do things both on offense and defense, and there isn't enough flexibility not just to a season, but to a game. The Bills are very good coming out of the half. They have been for years under McDermott, whether people want to admit that or not. They are.
As a matter of fact, it's somewhat proven in that Atlanta game. The defense hemorrhaged in the first half. Probably the reason that you ultimately do, like, yes and no, like, ultimately lose the game. Like, yeah, you gave up a bunch of points, but they only give up three in the second half to keep you in the game actively.
To keep you alive.
The Bills do come out of the half right away and score a touchdown. They start getting stops. And all of a sudden, we've got a football game again. What was looking like a potential blowout is now stabilizing. Unfortunately, the offense doesn't get better from there. The defense gives you everything they have until it's just too late. And the offense still doesn't get anything done for you anyway. Even if they manage to block another field goal or like it misses or something like that, the offense still gave you nothing else after that.
Yeah. And so ultimately, with that being said, that's where I sit. With the trade deadline coming up and everything with that, I do find myself sitting here thinking they need to maybe add on the offense. If it's a scheme thing, it's a philosophy thing, and nothing's going to change, well, I'd like to find that out. And if you can add someone like Rashid Shaheed, who will be able to spread the defense out and draw coverage away and maybe allow Keon Coleman to be opened up a little bit more, Kincaid, Shakir, Palmer, then great. Where the defense, I saw it on Monday night. Even as hemorrhaged as they are, they could at least hold it together.
And I will argue the other side of that on the other side of this break.
803-0550, the number to call. What do you want to see the Bills do with the trade deadline coming up? We've had a great time talking about this week. We'd love to keep that going. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer, filling in for One Bills Live today. This is WGR.
When people say, where is their X receiver? Where is the guy who's like, man, that guy that you're saying, hey, in crunch time, this is who we got to go to. To me, it's James Cook. And I'm finding a million ways to get him the football. I think you even look at like San Francisco and what they do with Christian McCaffrey. I think of the big moments of the Bills and the playoffs in the years past. I think of the big moments and big games for them. To me, it goes back to not just a Josh Allen crazy play, big runs from James Cook, big possessions where they give the ball to him a lot and they get some momentum and get going offensively and it opens everything else up for him.
Andrew Whitworth giving his thoughts on the Bills' offense, and for him, it runs through James Cook, and probably right.
That's how the offense is operating.
When the rushing attack is going, they are humming. I don't think that's even really arguable. The thought process is there, though, is, yeah, but if they stop James Cook, do you have a second option? Do you have something for your MVP quarterback to get the ball to? I think they do in Dalton Kincaid. I like Khalil Shakir. After that, I think it's a real big question mark for what you have.
And I think that it has to do with the fact that it is the – I'm getting more and more to it's the offense's identity. It's the coordinator's identity. It's – they wear their identity on clothing.
Yeah.
This is kind of not a secret. And it's very public what they want – or at least what Brady wants his offense to look like, to a point where I saw a wide receiver who is doing just fine this year, by the way, in Stephon Diggs, have his numbers tank in Buffalo in the half of the season that Brady takes over.
Mm-hmm.
Said wide receiver forces his way out of Buffalo and has been just fine after a major knee injury. Probably would be your best receiver on the roster if he was retained. But this offense does not emphasize boundary receivers. We're seeing a lot about film breakdown about how the wide receivers are not getting open. Then help them. Scheme it. They're NFL route runners. You cannot tell me that you cannot create a play to create somebody open. They are still NFL athletes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm seeing Tyquan Thornton get plays that chalk him up wide open in Kansas City.
Yeah, because we talked about that to start the year of the too high safety, and it's been played a lot in the NFL. And look, with the Bills, they played a lot. But you're also now starting to see defenses going a little bit away from that because you're getting beat. It's a lot like with the Bills' defense as a whole, where, cool, we're not letting up the big play, but we're letting teams drive 12 to 15 plays on us. Because everything in front, they're just taking it.
Intermediate passing attacks still should be a thing on too high safety.
Mm-hmm.
If you're playing a base cover two. There's also, especially when you're playing a cover two, if you're playing the zone, on the boundary, if you attack it right, you get a player in the flat, you get a player to attack that sideline just above where the corner is, you get away from the hook curl zone. Right on that sideline before the safety can get down there in time, you go one deep. You go one to the sideline on a post or an out route, and you get the flare out so that you draw the corner up into his zone. A simple flood concept.
Probably works. I don't want to like make it sound like...
And I don't think it's that easy, so to say.
Right.
Because I'm a nobody talking to a microphone. But I at least understand schematics enough that there is a mix of a talent issue. But at the same time, I'm seeing San Francisco trot whatever receiver is healthy out there. And they lead the league in passing in yards per game.
I mean, it's also just trying out whatever quarterback's healthy.
With two quarterbacks.
Yeah, it's Mac Jones and Brock Purdy going back and forth. Who's not, healthy, who's not.
And neither of which I would call an MVP candidate, much less a past winner of one. Or who I would call either of them a top 10 quarterback in the National Football League. I think that's easy to say. And it's not like San Francisco's current wide receiver room is made of game breakers.
No, but San Francisco might also be a curious one to look at. I listen a lot to John Middlecoff. He's on The Volume, Colin Cowherd's podcast network, and he used to be a former scout, and he worked around the league. But he's based out of the West Coast, and he talks a lot about the 49ers. And when talking about Kyle Shanahan, most people acknowledge Shanahan's one of the best offensive minds in football. I don't really think that's anything crazy to say. That's probably true. He's choked in big moments, no doubt. But it is curious to see how good their passing attack has been, how they're able to kind of just get whoever open. And yet, you know, Middlecoff, when talking about them, is always like, yeah, but like they're so predicated on the run. They're so predicated. They need to get the run game going. It's the Shanahan offense.
Right.
You could look at Buffalo and what they've gotten. It could be the exact same thing.
It could be.
But where the 49ers seem to use the run to get the pass game open, it doesn't look like the Bills really are able to do that. Their passing game oftentimes just feels like it's Allen working magic with people. We've heard this, by the way, for years. It even goes back to Dable.
Right.
Where why does it look so difficult? You know, why is no one just open that Allen can just, boom, first read, go? Mahomes and the Chiefs have done this for years. Now, you're also looking at Andy Reid and Kyle Shanahan. If you want to go to the Rams, you know, with Puka Nacua, like, he just happens to be open. Why? Like, these are some of the best offensive minds ever.
Yeah, with Sean McVay running that, yeah.
But this is also, I think, to many people's point of, yeah, and that's why you get out-coached in the playoffs, is that Brady maybe isn't that ascending offensive talent that you're just like, I mean, yeah, like, he's going to be one of the best offensive minds in the sport, no doubt. Where instead, I think he's just maybe pretty good, and he's got an all-world quarterback and a Pro Bowl running back to work with.
And that will be good enough typically to land you an offensive coordinator position.
Mm-hmm. And okay. to keep it.
Or a head coach position, head coach. I should say. Oh, hey, Brian Daboll. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, if you prove to be struggling with said quarterback, that's how you end up getting fired.
Mm-hmm.
See a Ken Dorsey, who then goes to a different team and then also gets fired. But while, again, I want to emphasize, Brady's not Dorsey, and thank goodness for that. That said, it is getting to a point where I no longer, A, understand the mantra, and B, I no longer want it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not because of, oh, big wide receivers and big numbers equals big fun. No, I'm looking at the schematics and thinking, maybe the wide receivers that you have can be utilized under a different system.
Well, people talk about that with Keon Coleman.
Yes.
That he's just not being used correctly.
He's not
that's
being...
probably 100% right.
And it's... We had a caller yesterday. I think it was Jerry. He mentioned the 50-50 ball terminology.
You know, it's ridiculous to build around for that.
And the problem is that a 50-50 is... That's a lot of percentage for a not good play.
Mm-hmm.
Why can't we design plays that are getting these receivers open? You mentioned James Cook on the wheel route, and that's part of good play design, and Allen just doesn't throw it. Part of it's also sometimes on Allen, and mm-hmm. it's okay to criticize the quarterback if he's not playing up to par. And over the last two games, that's been the case. I have more faith in Allen than I do the offensive scheme on how the offense will improve. Because I have a track record.
Mm-hmm.
It's still infuriating, to say the least, because of the fact that, and this is why we go about talking about the trade deadline thing. I'm foregoing my desire to acquire a wide receiver because offensively it's not going to change anything schematically that the Bills are going to do.
Yes, that's
if
more
I can
you're
add,
at. Yeah.
If I can add an athletic safety,
mm-hmm.
if I can add a guy who's rangy, the Bills clearly trust Cole Bishop in the box. Send him on blitz pickup, or send him on blitzes, send him on support, send him to be an aggressor. He's tied for the lead in sacks. He gets home. And if I can have somebody more reliable than Taylor Rapp to command the back of my secondary, it might improve the defense a lot more because it's not just the run game anymore that the defense is struggling with. It's everything. And when it comes to the passing game, look, I can't do much about the funk that Christian Benford's in. He has zero pass deflections on the entire year. I can't help that. At least not in that sense.
No, and even his passer rating, and I know it's passer rating, it's not everything, but last year it was 86.6 allowed against him. This year it's at 122.1.
With the current roster, I can't help him.
Mm-hmm.
But if I can get a safety that's more reactive, quicker to the ball, more rangy, able to make plays, be that center fielder type, all of a sudden you don't have to be running as much of a two high. You can run three and let Benford be part of that deep third. You can run three and let Trey be the hook curl and let the safeties take the two halves.
Mm-hmm.
Or the two thirds, sorry, and then Benford the other third. You can run more like that and be a little bit more careful that you don't want Trey getting beat deep. You can make a little bit more protections if you upgrade the safety position.
You can be more versatile.
You can be more versatile. You can be more rangy. And it's about getting another athlete that can get to plays on time. Because right now I see Taylor Rapp, and I don't see that from him.
He's late to almost everything.
He's late to almost everything, and it's tough. That's why I'm at safety. I'm at safety first, corner second, wide receiver is down the list.
Mm-hmm.
Because I believe the Bills can benefit on defense. And yes, you said it's probably a survivable thing. I'm here to say it's not.
Yeah, you're more pointing to it. We have hit DEFCON 1 with that defense.
It's not even that it's DEFCON 1. I don't want to be the Cowboys this year.
Mm.
Where I need my offense to score 30 points a game just to maybe win. The Bengals of last year. That is what they're looking at. If I can do anything to fix it, that should be my priority. Because how do you win a championship? It is still a complete game. How'd you lose 13 seconds? Wasn't the offense's fault?
No.
You need a complete team. Oh, but the coin toss. Yeah, what about the coin toss? You still need to trot a defense out there to defend. Because the Bengals, 1 week after that debacle, proved that to be the case. You want to stick to the principle of the defense let you down? Then I would be using my first priority on a trade deadline acquisition to improve my secondary. Because the pass rush, they're 10th in sacks in the league. Get me a better safety.
I will say, just on the defense, the two games they've lost gave up 23 and 24 points. I'm not saying they've done everything well, but I'd argue for most of the year they've done more than enough. And they are wounded, where the offense, for the most part, healthy and still struggling. You miss Kincaid for a game, yes, and Palmer goes down, but for the most part, you have your compliments there. And the most important part is there.
But that's the other thing. They're wounded, so they can't even be better.
Yeah. 803-0550, the number two call. We'll take your calls after this quick timeout. Zach Jones and Derek Kramer filling in for One Bills Live. This is WGR. Our number one continues to roll along here. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer filling in for One Bills Live. Talking Bills offense and defense, what actually needs to get improved as we tread closer and closer to the deadline? I'm more at the offense, but Derek, I think you do make an interesting point of, would it really matter? The Bills offense coordinator, Joe Brady, might be stuck in his ways, and this is how I do things. I don't use boundary receivers.
It's not necessarily stuck in his ways, but I'm looking at trends at this point, and mm-hmm. I'm thinking it's starting to make sense, and I'm looking at impact. What's going to be more impactful for me?
Yeah, would bringing in a Rashid Shaheed be as impactful as just an athletic safety?
If you can get me a safety that knows the basics of defenses, and, I mean, look, say what you will about the guy. If there's someone that I can trust to at least get a safety in season ready to go, I'm probably going with the guy that used to play safety. Sean McDermott.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, with what Taylor Rapp has become this year, I've become immensely frustrated with him. But I also think that might have been Rapp is getting scolded for taking out teammates too often.
And so now he's got to pull back. And
he's
got to
pull
he's
back.
Just arriving late
and
constantly.
Now he's arriving late. Bishop is... I'm seeing optimism out of him. Like, yeah, the tackling's still not great.
He plays for the Buffalo Bills. That's just par for the course.
There's the team right now.
That's par for the course right there.
Which, it's not excusable, but I'm starting to see the vision with Bishop again. Like, I'm back to it. I was bullish on the safeties this year in the first round and through the entire draft. I was even hoping for the likes of, like, a Kevin Winston, Xavier Watts, Billy mm-hmm. Bowman to be added on this team. I get none of them. And, like, that's fine, but can we have a redo there
mm-hmm.
in the trade market? Safeties on the downside of where I'm arguing this is are not as available
nope.
as a wide receiver could be.
You notice I'm bringing up a receiver name, but I don't really have a safety name I can just throw out there.
Yeah, like, I would love for the Bills to go and try to, like, talk to Arizona about Buda Baker. It's probably not happening.
Yeah.
It's a dream.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we had a caller yesterday about Justin Simmons. Why is he not on an NFL team? There might be a reason for that.
Yep. 803-0550, the number to call. Let's get to the phones. And Ryan is first up this segment. Ryan, how we doing?
Great, Josh. Derek, great show. Happy Friday, guys. So a couple of things I want to talk to you guys about. I want to also, Bills coming off a bye week, they're going to be facing Carolina. Same team they Carolina beat Atlanta, 30-0 at home. By the way, Carolina 3-0 at home. I understand McDermott is 8-0 off the bye week. I really don't care, to be honest. Rico is going to go off on them unless they fix his defense, run defense in the bye, which I highly doubt it. Thirdly, I want to talk about Mr. Brandon Bean. This guy has never picked a wide receiver in the first round. Only thing he had was Stephon Diggs, which he traded away his first-round pick to get Stephon Diggs to Minnesota. Guess what Minnesota did? They picked Justin Jefferson. That's where the whole mess, this roster is messed up from that. If you would have had Justin Jefferson without that trade, I guarantee we would have had a championship by now. And also, he traded away to KC to pick Coleman. And then after that, Ladd McConkey was on the roster, and the San Chargers picked him after Coleman. Imagine if we would have had Ladd McConkey on the team. This is a disaster by Bean. Bean needs to be called out. Now this guy's going around, oh, I need a receiver? Bro, what were you thinking when you went on the morning show with Jeremy and Joe? Come on, bro. This guy needs to be called out, guys. Come on. I need to talk on this. Thank you.
Yeah, Ryan, thanks for the call. I mean, I've been giving my thoughts for months.
Yeah,
I mean, I think he's been a pretty poor drafter for years. I'm not going to the Jefferson Diggs thing. Diggs was incredibly successful for the Bills.
Diggs was the right call for what they needed. And it's also not a guarantee that Justin Jefferson is selected by the Bills. And you mentioned it in the last segment. Jefferson is fighting a little bit of a stigma. Well, off air, you said this with me, though.
When he was coming into the league.
When he's coming into the league, he had a stigma of being the slot receiver. And the Bills had Cole Beasley. So, improper scouting sometimes leads to a team benefiting on that sort of thing. That team was Minnesota. The Eagles infamously grabbing Jalen Reagor before him and paying the price for that for a couple of years. But even Philadelphia, they go ahead and turn back on their mistakes. Throw a first rounder at Tennessee, get John Robinson ultimately fired in season.
Yeah.
When they trade AJ Brown to Philadelphia. But Diggs at the time there, I'm not going to go revisionist on that one. He was exactly what they needed, and his career in Buffalo was great until Joe Brady takes over.
803-0550, the number two call. Rich, we'll get to your call next at the top of the hour if you hang on there. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer, you're listening to WGR.
I think they are saving some stuff. I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but I think they're trying to be fully formed by January and maybe hold back a little bit, kind of similar to Kansas City. It's a different way of thinking. You know, it's kind of like the old Greg Popovich Spurs where you spend a couple months kind of playing possum with teams. Maybe it's an excuse. There shouldn't be an excuse because they look bad in Atlanta. But I do think that the Bills are maybe holding back some stuff and that maybe they got to pull it out a little sooner than they expected.
Go Long TD's Tyler Dunn on Chopin Bulldog yesterday. I was sort of hinting at that, maybe not consciously, but I guess definitely thinking that when I was mentioning, you know, I don't want them playing their best football in September, right? I don't want them showing everything. I guess it's probably where I was more leaning towards is, yeah, you maybe hold some stuff back in September, October, and then, you know, December, January, we start to pull things, you know, out of the cupboard and really start to be fully formed. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer filling in here for One Bills Live as the Bills are on the bye week. Derek, you made a face. Do we have breaking news?
No, it's a stat.
Oh, that's not great. That's going to be bad.
Eric Turner, cover one.
Going to be bad news for us.
Has a graph on plays on the ball by the defense.
Mm-hmm.
And in 2020 through 2024... their interception numbers are around like 15 to 19.
Right, yeah.
And their pass breakups are around 30 to 45.
Mm-hmm. I'm assuming those are good numbers.
I'm going to show this to you, and nobody else is going to have the context, but this 2025 dot has barely moved off the X or Y axis.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Well, now...
get me a safety.
Now... you show that, and it is really like it's very stark. You have a bunch of them in the top right corner, and then 2025 is in the bottom left corner.
And it's six games, but also you are at less than, okay, based on the axis here and how the denominations are going, I'm looking at maybe 5 pass breakups all year and 2 interceptions.
And
one of which was by a linebacker.
And that would point to what Sal has brought up with the cornerback room of not really getting to the ball, not having any pass breakups, the turnover number, well, the takeaway numbers being down because, well, the last 2 weeks you've lost the turnover battle.
I've got Benford with 0 deflections on the season.
Yeah.
I've got Terrell Bernard having one of the interceptions. Cole Bishop's the only other player that has a pick. It is the fact that you're not getting plays on the ball to a point where it is detrimental. And it is also, I've been mentioning him, Taylor Rapp. He's not on this list either. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have a play on the ball.
No, really, when you notice Rapp, it is almost never for something positive.
It is to a point now, like, I'll settle for an extra corner, honestly. But what if they trade for a corner at the trade deadline, though, it's also sending me a message that Max Hairston is probably not playing this year. I would imagine they're going to operate under the operation of, we're going to get another cornerback, so we don't need to trade for one.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I'm leaning towards safety as my dream target. Once again.
Yeah, there's no backup coming there. I mean, the backup is Hamlin after he's off of IR, which, and they've already kind of done that song and dance. They probably don't want to.
The problem is
probably
that.
Is not much improvement there.
The problem is that after week 4, I was unironically asking for Hamlin to replace Rapp.
But so on safety, we've already heard multiple Bills players bring up how hard it is to learn that system and how it took time to really learn that system and to get comfortable. Rasul Douglas comes in as a corner, but he's more, you know, chaperoned essentially by the experienced safeties. I don't love it. It's not something I've ever wanted, but maybe this is why they go to a Jordan Poyer. He's experienced, and maybe he can just hold it down. Bishop make the athletic plays. I do imagine a scenario very soon where they pull the plug on Rapp. This is a miss. This is not working. And to be fair, him and Bishop just do not work well together. The combination of those two is not good.
It is becoming like last year where you have effectively 2 box safeties.
Mm-hmm.
But Bishop is becoming the more athletic one that can make a play every now and then versus Rapp, who is last year's DeMar Hamlin.
Yeah.
Where you're not counting on him to make a play.
But that's where I point to the offense of, that's where you go make – trust your all-pro quarterback. Trust your MVP quarterback, too. If he has a new toy, he's going to use him. You know, even if maybe it's not working perfectly with him in the OC, there have also been guys open that Allen is just not hitting fast enough because of the offensive line, what have you. Get more speed in the offense. So that maybe you can have just quick hitters. Maybe that involves getting James Cook into the passing game again. He's had 1 target through 2 games, the last 2 games.
And it's not just Cook, though. It's all of them. Ty Johnson has 2 catches this year.
Well, yeah, we talked about that yesterday, where when he's on the field, you're pretty much showing half your hand to the defense, going, well, we're not gonna run the ball.
But also, it's an effectiveness thing. Johnson's struggling. He has 2 He has 2 catches on 7 targets.
He's not used in the offense at all.
He's not being used in the offense at all, but now when he's being targeted, though, it's not getting home.
Mm-hmm.
Or it is a drop, or it's just a blown-up play right now. It just, you can't imagine that Ty Johnson, with the season that he had with the passing game last year, through 6 games, has 2 receptions for 19 yards. And that James Cook, who has been very efficient, actually, 12 catches on 14 targets. Why are you not involving him more?
Yeah.
Because then you are threatening with, okay, maybe we are running the football here.
Yeah, you're not giving away the game to the whole advantage for the offense is the defense does not know what you're going to do.
And that's why I'm having less faith of what you mentioned here. Of if they get Josh Allen a new toy, he can use it. My question is, will they?
803-0550, the number 2 call. Let's get back to the phones, and we promised at the break we'd go to Rich first, and we will do just that. Rich, how are we doing today?
Hey, guys, I'm doing well. Look, what last night proved to us, when a 40-plus-year-old quarterback can throw for 300 yards, and then what Drake London did to us in the Atlanta game, what Diggs did to us in the New England game, is that, you know, everybody eats is a crap phrase that was made up by Bean because he's dead set on using possession type receivers and not drafting speed. It, right now, we need receivers with elite speed, because what that does is it stretches out the inter. We talk about the middle space in a cover two.
Right.
Well, guess what happens if you don't have elite speed? The safeties crash down and those windows close. And we don't have that right now. So the fact of the matter is we need to start to either draft or trade for some elite speed and start to, you know, open up the offense. And it just seems like each game that goes by, that window, that internal window in the middle of the field against cover two is getting squeezed more and more. We have nobody that can stretch that window open for Josh Allen. And that's why he's having to squeeze throws in, especially in the middle of the field. So, I mean, I called you guys up yesterday about Bean. I am so sick and tired of him, man. You know, the guy has lived off the fact that he basically drafted, you know, Josh Allen, put all the pressure on him. But until we get an elite receiver with speed and ability to run routes, which is, you know, Shakir is a good route runner, but we've got nobody to stretch out the middle portion of a cover two zone, and we're going to continue to struggle against it. And you know what? You know, everybody runs the same concept, guys. You're talking about a smash concept against cover two, which hits the hole above the corner and in front of the safety. Everybody runs the same concept. The difference is it's the talent running the routes. It's receivers being able to get open, or speed where the defense is intimidated and the safeties have to drop back.
Yeah, Rich, I think you're right on all that.
Rich, thank you.
That's why I bring up Rasheed Shaheed. It maybe doesn't necessarily mean he's going to have all of a sudden 9-10 targets. It's not who he is, but it'll be enough to spread the defense out. I think that's maybe Xavier Worthy's best attribute to Kansas City. When he's on the field, you have to account for the fact that he is statistically the fastest guy in the NFL. You have to account for that. And that may also mean that they throw a deep ball that goes incomplete, but they threw it and he was open. And now the safeties have to drop back.
The fact that you throw it means they have to worry about mm-hmm. it.
And the Bills do not have that. Look, the Josh Palmer catch is great and it looks awesome. But to Rich's point, they don't have anyone else that's beating the defense. They don't have anyone that's a speed option that is going to stretch a defense. Palmer was brought in to be that separation artist. That was the whole thing, is that maybe right. LA was underusing him. Look at his separation statistics. They look awesome. I have discovered, or at least I think many of us have discovered throughout the start of the season, is that those are super subjective. And for one, you know, advanced analytics department, they'll be like, hey, this guy separates like crazy. Like, this is awesome. The other one will be like, he's never separated a day in his life. He's still living with his parents. He's never separated from anybody. So there's a tough point there, and I think you can just look to speed, and that is an easy way to look at it. And that's something the Bills offense has desperately needed literally for years. That was why many people were clamoring for Worthy at the time, kind of looking past the fact that he was, what, 170, 165.
Right.
I mentioned, don't compare him to Tyreek Hill. He's 20 pounds lighter than him in Hill's rookie year.
Right.
But it was more the idea of, but look what he can offer you. And that's the same with Shaheed. You see some of these broken plays from defenses, and New Orleans, who is not good at deep balls, they're not. I mean, we talked with the reporter from New Orleans.
Right,
that was the whole thing, is that, hey, the offense actually isn't terrible. They just can't hit anything 15 plus yards down the field. You hope Allen, not necessarily it's the 60-yard go balls. It's not that necessarily those. You've mentioned it. It's the middle of the field stuff. It's the quick passes you can get out. I'm not saying Allen's been infallible either. There have been moments as well he's not diagnosing blitzes correctly. He's not getting the ball out to guys that are open. This has been something we've all seen. He is at times looking for the big play, not taking what's in front of him. But the more toys you have in the toy chest, you know, the more options a guy has, the easier it's going to be. I think that's where, you know, everyone eats is not necessarily a crappy saying. I think, though, the Bills' feeling on it is that our quarterback is just going to make magic with some pretty good guys. Where my point is, and to Rich, where he started is, for Cincinnati, are they built perfect? No. But the way their offense is built, it's why a 41-year-old quarterback can go in there and target Ja'Marr Chase 23 times and T. Higgins 10 times and walk away looking pretty.
A lot of that is
very much on Pittsburgh's defense. But he's 41 years old. He's been with those guys for 2 weeks.
I mentioned the Pittsburgh Steelers, not the Pittsburgh Steelers, the Dallas Cowboys offense. They go ahead and they have CeeDee Lamb. They acquire George Pickens. they, for some reason, get rid of Micah Parsons. And if they didn't do that, I really think that they'd be a better team overall because they were worried about stopping the run. They can't do that either. But at least you can get home to the quarterback if you have Parsons there. But Dallas's offense also has that of, we have players, we're going to keep them getting open, but we're also going to feed these guys because they are talented. They are good. And that is something that you can go ahead and understand the core concept, understand the threat. But a talented player is going to make sure that things happen. I just keep looking, though, at what the track record has been for the Bills receivers under Joe Brady and wonder how much it's holding them back. If Allen is looking for the bigger play, he's not taking these easy things. That has to do with scheme too, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a scheme that doesn't mesh with your quarterback.
Now, it is tough to say
Allen is a renegade.
But it is tough to say that because he did win the MVP last year.
He won the MVP last year. And yet his numbers were not where they usually are when he won said MVP. He won that MVP based on the narrative of they don't have enough talent around him.
And he's not turning the ball over. Look what he's doing with all these, you know, plumbers. I mean, it's essentially what the argument
turned into. And I didn't love that because it's bashing the rest of the roster. But that's what the media narrative went with him on that.
Maybe it's somewhat right, but
it might have been right, but I don't like doing it anyway. At least not for the case of an MVP.
Mm-hmm.
Like, look at this guy. He's playing with a bunch of crap. And we should give him something for it. And it's like, that's not the right message. I know what you're trying to do, which is elevate the term valuable and most valuable player. But anyway, that's last year. But my issue still is that the offense, to me, the offensive scheme, and the general manager's ideology are what hold you back from that sort of, I would say not hold back, but it's where it conflicts with a quarterback that wants to be a goblin, that wants to play with his hair on fire sometimes. And I hear the head coach make public comments that they do need some speed.
Mm-hmm. He mentioned, I know Sneaky Joe brought this tweet up from a few years ago, but why they added Emmanuel Sanders is, quote, don't want to lose your fastball.
And that's where I think, if you're blaming the head coach, I think you're wrong-ish. I don't want to go fully into that, but like wrong-ish.
By the way, did Bean actually coin the term everyone eats? I thought that was Brady.
I thought that was Brady too.
I wasn't sure. Brady's got a hat on. I'm like, was I wrong?
Brady's wearing clothing with it. Like, yeah, but, I don't think that's...
I mean, but like last year, was it Brady or Bean that coined everyone eats?
I'm pretty sure it was Brady.
I thought it was.
I feel like it was.
Again, Rich said it, and I'm like, but it wasn't? I don't know.
But it also might have been an indirect rallying cry about Diggs leaving.
Oh, I mean, it absolutely was part of that. Absolutely was part of that.
So I guess we'll need to look into the origination of it just to be sure. But I really believe it was Brady. But also, if it's the offensive coordinator that comes up with it after Diggs leaves, which is a boundary receiver, which they don't utilize... Do you see the hamster wheel I'm running on Zachary?
It's kind of crazy, though, looking at his career at LSU. I mean, he might fit the Big Ten. He might actually want to go to Penn State. But,
oh, my God.
It is kind of crazy, though, looking at what Brady was a part of. Where he makes his name is that 2019 LSU team that I would still argue is the most offensively talented team of all time. They go undefeated. They run everybody out of the building. Burrow to Chase to Jefferson. They're incredible. But that's them throwing the ball over the yard. I mean, that is maybe the perfect encapsulation of everybody eats. He's got a ton of talent, and they're just throwing the ball everywhere, and everyone's getting a piece of it. Randy Moss's son at tight end is catching touchdown passes in big-time games. Like, it didn't matter. Burrow throws for 60 touchdowns, but it seems like with the Bills, because you even look at Carolina, like they're throwing the ball over the yard to the point where Matt Rule's like, we need to run the ball more. You're fired. But with the Bills, it's been very different. Where now, yeah, he does seem to have like a because you remember when they go get Curtis Samuel, the whole thing was he had his best year when Brady was the OC. It seems to just be with the Bills right now, they don't want to do that. They want to be different. Maybe this is, quote unquote, an evolution for Brady. Maybe it is. Maybe it isn't. Maybe this is, I have stood on this for a while here. I think the everyone eats comes from the lack of talent, but they don't want to bash their own team, right? I mean, it's fair, but it's, hey, we don't have a number one anymore. We have a bunch of guys, but we have an MVP quarterback, and so everyone's going to get the ball. Anyone that's worth it is going to get the ball. But the problem is, not that long ago, they had something similar in John Brown and Cole Beasley and a bunch of guys. Duke Williams gets 10 targets in a playoff game, and they have to very quickly change their idea on it. The problem is where they're at now, Allen is paid heavily, and that's just the fact of the matter. The quarterback is going to get paid a ton because it's the most important position in sports, and this is where the draft has been so important and why it just boggles the mind. You know, going back to Ryan's call, I don't want to bash on the Jefferson Diggs thing because at the time it worked perfect for them to get Diggs, but yeah, you look at a guy like Keon Coleman, he doesn't fit your offense. He doesn't fit your quarterback. You did the long 50-50 jump ball guys for Allen before. It's not what he worked with. He worked with speed guys who got separation fast, and he could just kind of throw the ball over the yard. That's what worked. Coleman has not fit that. He never fit that coming out of Florida State. Now, I'm not going to bang the drum and say, I was always for Ladd McConkey. I wasn't. I was somebody that looked at him and thought, I think in the NFL he's going to be a slot guy. And ultimately, that has been proven to be...
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. TNCs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
False. He is kind of an everything guy. A little bit smaller, but an everything guy. I've openly acknowledged constantly, I'm an Adonai Mitchell guy. Now, he hasn't necessarily shown anything in the NFL, but I also think there could still be something there.
He shows flashes, but then, you know, he fumbles the ball out of the end zone and gets a holding call in the same game, and it's like, we got to bench him,
He also just drops, like, the easiest catches.
But, like, you turn into a game like the Rams game, though, and, like, the coach's staff's got to go, we got to bench him, right? Like, there's no choice.
He might be in this week, though, just because of all the injuries they have at receiver, namely Josh Downs as well. But
it's your redemption arc. Here you go.
I still look at some of this stuff and just think it's a talent issue that they're trying to overcome, and it's going to be a longer process because, they're no longer at the phase they were when they traded for Diggs, when Allen was, ultimately very cheap. It's why the draft is so important. I hate saying it like this, but it's true. It's the cheap labor, and now with the way college football is transitioning to the NFL, you're not waiting 2-3 years for a guy to be very good. Look at the quarterback position, maybe more than any of them. Guys staying in college longer – and then they come to the NFL, and they're somewhat ready-made. Jackson Dart looks like a good quarterback. Bo Nix, with the most starts in NCAA history. Kind of a finished product for Sean Payton.
Denver didn't blink twice.
Nope. That's kind of how it is, and it's the same with receivers. The talented receivers are coming in, hitting right away, and by year two are on fire. Jackson Smith and Jigba. Now we're at a point with Ohio State receivers. Just pick one.
But, like, you mentioned the quarterbacks thing. Penix, longtime starter with Washington.
Mm-hmm.
Very rarely are you seeing now like the players that are like your redshirt sophomores that are going into the league after maybe one full year of starting. That trend is going that way because you want your quarterbacks to be ready-made. You don't have time to wait anymore. You don't have the chance to see if the high athletic upside of an Anthony Richardson is going to be able to figure it out. The Colts, as a matter of fact, before the end of his rookie contract, moved on to Daniel Jones, and it's working. And it also, Daniel Jones is also giving you a little microcosm on time on task with the right situation might fix you, much how like Sam Darnold or Baker Mayfield or even Geno Smith before he went back down in the tank.
But Daniel Jones is maybe the newest iteration of that.
Daniel Jones is becoming the newest iteration of that. And maybe there is something to it. Time on task. You need to have guys that are ready to go immediately. You cannot make this slower transition nowadays because teams are not willing to wait anymore.
No. 803-0550, the number to call. Matt, Johnny, James, we'll get to your guys' calls when we come back. You're listening to Zach Jones, Derek Kramer, filling in for One Bills Live. This is WGR.
Sitting at 4-2 going into a bye week. You know, at any point you can have a winning season. Almost halfway through the year. I know we're not quite halfway, but I think you'll take those odds.
Buffalo Bills quarterback Josh Allen before heading off to the bye. You know, it should be said the Bills are 4-2. And they do, throughout their history, I mean, where we're at so many years in a row, where they've lost two in a row. They are still 4-2.
And
they
it's
are
typically still here.
Yeah, no.
This
yeah.
part of the season where they lose a couple games in a row. Wow, it really is like clockwork. Oh, God.
So on that, that's kind of where I've stopped caring about it. Like, yeah, they lost two in a row. Like, and even after their first loss to New England, it was almost freeing to be able to talk about some of the issues the team had and not be, called, a doomer or whatever and you know, wanting the team to fail. Like, no. But this team has done very similar things throughout the last 5-6 years. They lose two in a row in, like, October, November, and then they go on an absolute heater to secure, like, the second or three seed because they've never been the first seed. And then they're on the divisional round. There have been outliers. They made the AFC Championship game last year, and they made it in 2020. But for the most part, it's kind of the same story over and over and over again. They will absolutely fix their stuff to a certain extent to go on a run. I will be absolutely stunned if it doesn't happen. And to be fair, if it doesn't happen, cool, I'm calling for jobs. We've done this a little bit too long.
Right.
But history will tell you, will show you, this team with Josh Allen a quarterback, they're going to go on a heater to end the year. And they're going to win some games that you're like, I mean, man, how are they not Super Bowl favorites? You look at the lines, it hasn't really changed all that much. I mean, only recently, and it may have changed after last night's result, but only recently did Pittsburgh finally overtake Baltimore's favorites in the AFC North. Again, it may have changed after last night. I don't know. But the Bills are still one of the Super Bowl favorites. Makes sense. Of course, you just want to keep getting to the dance. But that's where my problem has been with the team, is that it seems like the same things are reoccurring. We mentioned it for the trade deadline stuff. They're arguably looking for two of the same positions they've traded for in the last 2 years, in wide receiver and corner. I agree with you, though. Safety is above corner in that pegging order, but
they're less
and also maybe, yeah, it's going to be much harder to find. You see Cam Taylor-Britt for Cincinnati is a healthy and active yesterday, and you get wide-eyed because like, no, wait a second.
There might be a trade happening.
Wait a second.
Trades.
You know, that's corner. You can make that work. Wide receiver, you can make that work, especially when you have an elite quarterback.
They're not trading anyone. Joe Flacco saved their season.
Joe Flacco did maybe save their season.
He actually, like, unironically might have saved their season.
May have done that. But that's where I get very I guess maybe you want to say just dug down in the dumps about the team is, I think they're going to make the playoffs. But I'm well past, we hear some of the calls, and I think we all know somebody in our lives that mentions, be careful what you wish for. Remember the drought? Man, I'm well past that. There is a growing generation of Bills fans that only really know some success. They don't really remember the early years of the drought or the 2011 win over New England is like the high point of their Bills lives.
Yeah.
There's a generation of Bills fans growing that's not a thing. They only know the recent success. And we're well past the drought. We're at a point now where we're talking about Josh Allen's age and just how long McDermott's been here and now a new stadium's coming up.
And a consistently average drafting record by Brandon Bean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's no longer just a year of like,
it's no longer.
Bad years happen. Because that's absolutely right. Howie Roseman is considered almost unanimous.
I mentioned the Jalen Reagor pick.
Yeah, as the best GM in football. But yeah, he's had huge misses.
He picked Reagor over Jefferson.
And I think in back-to-back drafts, I think his first round was Jalen Reagor, wide receiver, then Andre Dillard on the offensive line. Both were terrible picks.
The man had Nelson Agholor as a first-round pick. Like, yeah, there are misses. But can you make up for it and draft stars in other rounds? And the Bills,
it's been a few years now.
It's that it's the lack of stars that is hurting them now. And it's not about, oh, okay, like these guys are good players. It is the lack of star power.
And when you bring up lack of star power, I saw Eric Turner bring this up, and I listen to Colin Cowherd a lot, and he brings this up too, because it's true in like every sport. These quote-unquote high-leverage situations. In baseball, it's high-leverage at-bats.
Right.
That's when you point to that star player. It's why Moneyball in baseball specifically didn't work as a 100% concept. You needed the guys with the human aspect and everything like that, just in a big moment made a big play. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. for the Toronto Blue Jays mm-hmm. has been this, that in moments when you need him most, hitting a home run, hitting a clutch single to drive in a run, grand slam, what have you. He's done pretty much all of it in these postseasons. Allen is that for the Bills, that when you need a big moment, he's got it for you. It's why I get frustrated when people are saying that they're leaning on their star players. You should. You absolutely should lean on your star.
You need to.
Yeah, you should absolutely lean into your star players. That's why they're there.
James Cook with the touchdown run to take a lead mm-hmm. that they would never unfortunately be able to keep. But that is a play that has to be made. And James Cook delivers it for you through hell or high water, Space Jam, stretching it over the goal line.
But past those two, who do the Bills have? Terrell Bernard has an eye for the ball, but he's not necessarily really kind of past that stuff in the fourth quarter. He's very much a negative, it feels like, for the Bills oftentimes. On the defensive line, maybe they've got it in Ed Oliver and Deion Walker. I don't want to say that that's not true. They may have that. But, for your corners, once Trey got hurt, they've really not been able to recover from that. Matt Milano, same thing, outside linebacker. Once he got his injuries, never really were able to recover from that. I don't want to say Bean has been terrible from the start. That's not true.
That's why I use the word average.
Right, and I think that's right. He's been average because he has had some hits, especially in the late rounds. But now it's a lot of not bloated contracts, but maybe contracts that shouldn't have been given. You look at all the extensions we have given out over this offseason. One of them is hitting in James Cook. Shakir is maybe a kind of incomplete, not really sure. He did pick up an injury. The passing offense as a whole hasn't been great, and he's a slot receiver. So there's, some wiggle room there. But Rousseau, Benford, Bernard.
Nothing out of them
nothing.
Right now.
Rousseau, continue to wait for him to pop, to move past just the underlying statistics and be overall very good. And we're still waiting.
Yeah, and it's to a point where, there are games where he's just on a milk cart.
Mm-hmm.
Atlanta was one of them. Terrell Bernard, he picks up an injury in the Atlanta game, but
they maybe got better.
But also, Bernard's probably of the three, your best one. Benford has zero pass breakups this year. And it's not out of a lack of targets.
Yeah, no. I mean, what we talked, his passer rating went up from, he was allowing 88% to now 111.
And while passer rating has a flawed metric to it, anytime there's a notable increase, though, there's a problem.
Yeah, it tells the story itself. But I think that's where I get worried even with the trade deadline stuff. Is it really just putting a Band-Aid on a bigger issue? Which is, their drafting has not been good enough. It's why we're looking at Keon Coleman as a second-round pick, begging for him to get moved around, Eric Wood, just to see what we got there. James Cook, they do pay him four years, $48 million. People want to see him in the offense more. Why? He's your second best player on the offense.
Right.
Kincaid, use him more. He might be really good. And I think this is maybe where where everybody eats really is a detriment, is the idea of not leaning on your stars when they should.
And ready? Even last year, you asked the question of who else can you even lean on? Kincaid has an opportunity at that big moment.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't happen.
It does not happen. Yeah.
It does not happen. And it's almost an incredible moment. Allen puts a prayer ball up on a moment where at the line of scrimmage you got outcoached. And Allen does everything that he humanly can. Because that play is supposed to go to Shakir on that motion in and then back out to the offensive left.
Mm-hmm.
He's wide open for your game that you need to get. But that blitz happens. And they had correctly diagnosed the protection at the line. But Spagnuolo puts that extra concept in there, and it hurts. But Allen does enough to offer an opportunity. And it's a relatively clean opportunity because there's no KC defender that's going to get his hands on this football somehow. Ultimately, somehow.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a throwaway. It's not even what I would call a prayer ball. I mean, in the situation that he throws it away
It even looks like it, but
when he lets it go, it is a prayer. But it's not at risk of being picked. It's not even at risk of being knocked down. It's tough to track it down, but it's tracked down. And you just had the other half of that play, unfortunately, not connect.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the tough part. That's the other part of it that I'm very optimistic about what Kincaid's been doing this season, because it does seem like maybe he has taken that next step, quote-unquote, so to say, in becoming the big play element. Because what has he been doing every week, save for a Jets game that they didn't need him? The answer is catching a 20-plus yard ball.
Yeah, even in the game against New Orleans, he only has two targets, but the one catches for 28 yards and a touchdown.
And that's literally called a category known as big plays.
Mm-hmm.
So am I seeing Dalton Kincaid becoming a big player who makes big plays? Maybe. It's the statistic. It's right there.
Yeah, I'd just like to see it more.
I'd like to see it more. And again, I see the graphic, though, of him being on the field 45% of the time. I just...
The New England game, he's only on it 54.4%. His other big game, Miami, 55%. Real quick, before we take our next time out, Bills, they'll be back in action next week, getting ready for Carolina.
Yeah.
Going to have to take on another big running back, and Rico Dowdle has been amazing. Bryce Young, and we had a caller recently... Ryan bring up, you know, how good Carolina's been. Namely, Bryce Young at home has been very good.
They took the Falcons to task 30-0. While transitive property doesn't work in the NFL, therefore
that is a thing. I mean, it did happen.
It did happen. It doesn't mean that Carolina is going to be guaranteed a win. It's something to look out for. They've been playing well.
Yeah, but I do want to bring up something here before we leave, because we were talking a little bit about it before the show started.
Yes.
And a little college football talk here, because I got to bow out to get ready for Show Bulldog, so Derek will have you for the last segment.
You won't be far here, though.
But I want to talk a little bit in college football, because there was a big contract extension yesterday. Kirk Cignitti at Indiana gets 8 years, $11.6 million.
I'll behave.
And the reason really why I want to bring it up, too, is I've seen a lot of people almost – seemingly worried at Cignitti getting that extension, that Indiana maybe rushed it. And, well, let's see how the year plays out. And I heard Paul Feinbaum talking about that today on ESPN. And Feinbaum, to many, is, you know, the voice of college football. For me, and this is someone that's not an Indiana fan and more just kind of enjoying the ride and everything like that, why wait? If you're not watching college football and you hear Indiana football and you go, what are we talking about? This is a program that had won 8-9 games in a 3-year run?
I was also being hyperbolic when we were originally talking about this off air, saying that Kirk Cignitti has already done more in 1.5 seasons than the entirety of Indiana football in 2 decades. Apparently, I was not far off on that.
Yeah, it's closer to 3, I think, right?
Yeah. So the last time, now I don't know if you remember it or not. Do you remember the last time that Indiana won more than 8 games in a season?
It's not 2020.
No.
That's like the quote-unquote last time they're good, but it's a COVID-shortened season. They take advantage of a bad schedule. When is it?
It's 1967.
Yeah, it's before I was born.
It's before a lot of us were born.
A few years. I'm coming around the block, but it's a few years before I'm born. But I know they haven't won a bowl game since the 90s.
If you've watched that season, you're not even a 41-year-old who had a great day yesterday.
Right, yeah.
Like, that's... But, like, that's where they are. Their last bowl win is 1991.
Yeah. So, for me, ultimately, in now 1.5 seasons, he's 17-2 on the job. He just beat Oregon in Autzen. And for me, I just – why wait?
They only have one.
With the Penn State job opening and him being the Eastern Pennsylvania guy from Pittsburgh, you know, Penn State might be a dream job for him. Why wait to maybe, you know, honestly, play with fire? And then if I'm Cignitti, too, and people may be wondering why I stayed Indiana, we'll point this out. They have one of the largest living alumni bases at, like, I think over 900,000. They actually do have quite a bit in the NIL fund. And if you're Cignitti, who, by the way, is not a young guy. He's 64. This contract will take until he's 72. This is probably the last big contract he has. It is top 3 in the sport. He's only behind Kirby Smart and Ryan Day. he does this stuff like we mentioned. I mean, you haven't won a bowl game since the 90s. They haven't won more than eight games in a season outside of last year since the 60s. They haven't won a Big Ten title since 67. Legacy. You're thinking about legacy when you're around, I would imagine, Cignetti's age. He does this two, three more years. Stuff like this. He's getting a statue. He's getting the stadium named after him.
Recreate a new stigma for Indiana football.
Yeah. And I think that might matter more than just being a guy that comes in and tries to do what James Franklin couldn't at Penn State, where instead he might build something long-lasting to Indiana. I think it's a great move by the Hoosiers, and it makes them super relevant in a Big Ten that is sort of in flux with everything going on. Michigan passed Harbaugh, Michigan State, garbage. Penn State now, unknown what they're going to do there. And you just beat Oregon, who did win the Big Ten title last year. Indiana might actually be becoming a power.
All right, now that you made me throw up in my mouth, I have to be snotty before we leave this segment.
Purdue is ranked number one in basketball.
Exactly.
Stars.
Exactly. That's what matters more anyway.
803-0550, the number to call. Show up in the Bulldog. Coming up at the top of the hour, Zach Jones, Derek Kramer. We've been filling in for One Bills Live. Derek, we'll have you the rest of the way when we come back. This is WGR.
Welcome back. Last segment here of Kramer and Jones. We've had fun hanging out with you. Hope you've had fun hanging out with us over these past couple days in place of One Bills Live. Thanks to everyone that's been calling in. You guys have been awesome. Everything's cool. We're all hanging out. And it gets me to another question, though, that is entirely different from the show topics that we've talked about today, and that's the bye week. The bye week is a fun thing in a different sense because you get it to unwind a little bit. Yes, we're going to have 2 weeks of constant discourse going on here, including on a football Friday. But you also don't have to worry about watching the Bills on Sunday. It could be a potentially very relaxing thing. That's all I get to say on that one. Sabres in action tomorrow as well. That's one way you can deal with the Bills bye week, by the way. The Sabres coming off of an eight goal extravaganza. So no better time for the Sabres to look cool than during the Bills bye week, I would say. So they play tomorrow afternoon, by the way. So if you're heading down to KeyBank Center, make sure you're enjoying a matinee day on a Saturday. Cool. It's not a matinee. It's just a Saturday afternoon game. Matinee days are for the week. Come on, Derek. But Sabres are cool, at least right now. Can they keep it up? And that's something Zach and I have talked about a lot off of the air is, can you keep this up? Because if you lose and don't look competitive against a Florida team that is also now dealing with injuries, you're kind of back to square one, unfortunately. And that's something you don't want to see. I definitely don't want to see that because I want the Sabres to be different this year. I don't know if that necessarily means that you have to be good, but I do need you to be different. I need you not to do the same old thing. Also looking at you on that one, Bills, stop doing the same thing. Stop losing in week five or losing two games in a row in October. It's not cool. I don't think any of us appreciate it. But it's going to be fun to see. I'll be back on tomorrow in the morning at 11 o'clock for a quick little sports talk Saturday before we pass things on to Sabres pregame with Brian Koziel. So hope to hear from you all again. Thanks for listening in. Thanks for calling in. For Zach Jones, I'm Derek Kramer. Pass the torch right on to the guys. Show up and Bulldog coming up next year on a Football Friday here on WGR.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. That seemed, I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.